So can I introduce you then? Or would you like to introduce yourself?
You can introduce me.
So this is Matt Odell. You probably know him from RHR, the number one Bitcoin podcast out there, in my humble opinion. Seriously, I think so.
Thank you.
Yeah. Builders in Bitcoin is probably number 462. He does a number of other things. He's a partner at 1031. He also hosts his own podcast, Citadel Dispatch. He does a number of open source supported initiatives from OpenSats. We work on a project with Wiz on Bitcoin TV. Am I missing anything? Yeah, I mean, there's probably like 15 other things that you do, but...
I had a very humble three-rig mining operation that I didn't get wrecked on.
Whoa, let's go. people are like just barely clapping because of how wrecked they got on their own. Okay, awesome. And I'd like to introduce a big friend of the park, Harry Sudock. Harry's the chief strategy officer at Grid Infrastructure. Harry's been kind enough to travel from New York. I think this is now his fourth time spending his time with us, presenting, speaking, staying until like midnight, talking with all of y'all about Bitcoin, Bitcoin mining, life, and so on. So it means the world when you spend a lot of your time with us. So can you guys give these guys a round of applause? Let's go.
I want to be on this side of you.
It's my good side.
Thanks for joining us, Harry.
Thanks for hosting.
So, I mean, we're running a tiny bit behind schedule, right? We're good? Okay, awesome. 30 minutes plus 15-minute Q&A. Get your questions ready. Hit Harry with hard questions. First of all, good morning, all. It's a pleasure to be here. We will be talking about proof of work and the importance of proof of work. And I think for this audience, obviously, y'all are more predisposed to understanding and appreciating proof of work. But I think for the wider, quote unquote, crypto industry and farther than from that, there's a major disconnect on the importance of proof of work and the difficulty adjustment and everything else that makes Bitcoin possible. So with all that said, Harry, why... At the core, why is it essential that Bitcoin relies on a proof-of-work system and Satoshi decided to go that route?
So I think it's important to just talk about what the core innovation in Bitcoin is, right? Bitcoin's not the first internet money or digital cash project to have existed. There's a long sort of history in the 90s and early 2000s of other attempts to do that, whether it's e-gold or e-cash or other projects. But there's a reason that Bitcoin worked and solved, you know, an actual computer science problem. And the trick with the computer science problem is the ability to make sure that the double spend problem was solved without a trusted third party. So Bitcoin works because I can send Bitcoin and nobody can stop me. And the way that Satoshi arranged the different components of the system in a unique way was the combination of proof of work, the difficulty adjustment, and applying those two developments against a hard cap supply. So what is proof of work? It is the contribution of computing power in order to process new transactions, include another block on the blockchain. So the difficulty adjustment is if everybody realizes that you're going to get paid 50 Bitcoin plus the transaction fees for those early blocks, we're all going to chase those new Bitcoin. So when 10 new computers join the network automatically, algorithmically makes it more difficult to get to the new block after what's called a difficulty adjustment, difficulty retarget. And so this is critically important because what it does is it lets the overall system be self-adjusting without the need for anybody who would come in sort of with an external force and try to tune things. So the reason why when you send a wire from your bank, the money is only spent once is because the people at the bank are moving the numbers in the database. In Bitcoin, there is nobody moving the numbers in the database. There's just the system running on a decentralized broad basis. And the reason that you're able to achieve this kind of core function is because you've removed the middleman, you've removed the third party by utilizing a proof of work consensus system. I was having a conversation last night with Mr. Alex Thorne from Galaxy, and he made a great point that I hadn't thought about in advance of this topic, which is that the other piece of fairness that Satoshi offered to the Bitcoin ecosystem with a proof of work based system is just fair distribution, right? So if you wanted to get Bitcoin before, you know, in 2010, or there might not have been an exchange, right? So the only way you could get some Bitcoin was to run a node and mine on your computer. And so what that did was it got Bitcoin into the hands of a lot of different people, and it made those net new Bitcoin available on a fair basis. So all you need to mine Bitcoin at that time is just computing power. And it's the same today, actually, is just computing power and electricity. That doesn't matter if you live, you know, in a country who has a totally destabilized currency. If you can get electricity and you can push that electricity through a computer, you can participate in the Bitcoin network the same way as everybody else. And so this fundamental homage to fairness baked into the DNA of the system, both in terms of how do you get net new Bitcoin, but also how do you make sure that nobody interferes with the throughput of transactions, is utterly foundational to the system. And if you didn't have either of these kind of capabilities, we wouldn't be here today.
Love it. I mean, let's unpack these different aspects here. I want to start with fair distribution, because Silicon Valley VCs love coming up with these ideas to do this brilliantly fair distribution around the world. I think Sam Altman recently had his WorldCoin, where he was going to have orbs in developing world countries, and they were going to scan your eyeballs and then give you a certain number of shitcoins in return for it. In your opinion, how does that fail versus Bitcoin? Now, how is Bitcoin's distribution superior to that?
Yeah, Bitcoin. So you know, I think that we're often tempted to think we're smarter than we actually are. And ego and hubris gets in the way when we think, you know, we know how to centrally manage a system, and the market is dumber than me. But what Satoshi did that was so effective was, you know, they basically said, these are just going to be fair on a market basis. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, there's this idea of like the watchmaker, right? The watchmaker puts the watch together, winds it once, and then it's up to the wearer to keep the winding going. And that's exactly kind of what happened, is that, you know, Satoshi released an open source project, dropped it on a mailing list, and, you know, Hal did the first transaction, and then it just kind of snowballed, you know, very, very slowly. But the lack of central planning and the sort of rules over rulers approach to the fair launch was just that, you know, the rules were going to be fixed and set and predetermined, but not the mechanisms that happen after the rules were set.
Right. I mean, the way I like to look at it is Nick Szabo has his famous paper, Trusted Third Parties Are Security Holes. Satoshi devised a system that allowed you to cryptographically verify that distribution was fair, and anyone who contributed work got equivalent amount to Bitcoin without a trusted third party. Because otherwise, you end up in these situations where, you know, fair coin for the world. You hear it all the time. Like this idea, like, oh, you're going to check a driver's license, you're going to check eye scans, you're going to check DNA records. Like there's always a trusted third party that has to basically do this verification process, and you never know if they're going to print their own money.
Well, and this is why you have to talk about the proof of work plus difficulty adjustment, right? Which is like, if you like, you know, we've spent a long time since Bitcoin sort of was started, but pull up a block. Right. Look at how a block is constructed. There's the block header that tells you that the difficulty adjustment was conformed to. Right. This is a valid block because the number of leading zeros is enough. And so you're able to see in every sort of bit of the data and the information that is available to you and available to all of us publicly, that the difficulty of the block is valid. Because, right, like you could find a block that has sort of a faked difficulty. It wouldn't be validated by nodes. And so you can see that the amount of work that went into that block is correct. And then you're also able to validate and audit the entire history of all the transactions. That's the running of the node from scratch thing that we should all be doing. And so you're able to do these two different types of audits to prove that the system is working the way that it was described. And so therefore the Bitcoin that you have is valid, right? There's no other monetary system where you're able to independently validate that you have what you're told you have.
It's pretty amazing that so many people, even people that are very active in the crypto space, that have tons of capital that they're deploying throughout, just there's this massive disconnect that they think the technology, the breakthrough is blockchain or distributed ledger technology. But the real breakthrough is this distributed proof of work and the difficulty adjustment along with it. And they completely miss that aspect. And then they devise all these other schemes as a result of trying to, you know, based off this logical inconsistency that they started with. And so another thing here is let's unpack the difficulty adjustment. Let's unpack this idea that Bitcoin has 99% uptime, very rarely goes down. I mean, we had, they come up with a new name every time, like the Arctic Blast we just had, where 40% of the hash rate went off the network, and the Bitcoin blocks kept coming in.
Yeah, this is what's so interesting about, you know, the changes in sort of the density of the network from, you know, even 5 or 6 years ago. The advancing of and professionalizing of the mining industry in part is a function of technology, right? The chip technology that we're utilizing to generate hashes now is so much more refined and improved. And there's a good graph of this where, you know, Bitcoin ASICs lagged the leading edge at foundries for like the first 7 or 8 years of the network. And now we're sitting right at the front edge along with sort of the most advanced chips in other industries. So there's been this convergence point that we've reached over the last couple of years. But the resilience of mining farms and facilities, the resilience of the overall network, there are, you know, enormous businesses being built on top of proof of work and difficulty adjustments. Certainly in the US, there's many of them, and there's others overseas. And these are core to the way that the network functions, in that, you know, the quality of operators has totally transformed. It's not somebody's garage. It's not something fly by night. These are enormous and exciting businesses, and they're businesses that are delivering value for Bitcoin, but they're delivering value beyond Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, I mean, so we take it for granted. The difficulty adjustment we take completely for granted, and it's actually not just the difficulty adjustment. This rough. This idea that, like, okay, so let's just unpack the 40% hash drop. Let's just, because that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
40% hash drop now.
But let's quantify it, right? Like, that's a million plus servers.
All turned off at the same time.
All dropping.
More or less, like in the same, like, 15 hours
hour,
or something.
Set of hour windows. And you know what didn't change? Block time.
But so that wasn't even the difficulty adjustment that protects Bitcoin in that situation. In that situation, blocks start coming in slower because the difficulty hasn't changed yet. And as a result, because blocks start coming in slower, transaction fees start to increase because people want their transactions to get included in the block. And then as a result, any miners who remain online are making more
outside
Bitcoin
rewards.
Revenue.
Yep.
All without a centralized third party that's pulling the strings, trying to reset the system, unplug Solana, replug it back in. That's insane.
Yeah, the magnitude of the Bitcoin project in terms of CapEx dollars, in terms of human capital, in terms of the economic value that Bitcoin represents all over the world, you know, it's crazy that there's an open source software project that's competing with global settlement. Right? That's crazy. And it's crazy that there's no product manager or project manager in charge of the roadmap. You know, there's just a bunch of rooms with people like us. And it's delivering value every single day. This concept of uptime and reliability is something that that I think like our frog has been boiled in traditional industries. Like, you know, if I want to get, you know, I saw a great clip of this, but just like go to your bank and ask for $100,000 in cash. Just see if you can get it, right? Like stress test your system. Go and see if you can actually get your hands on that. And I bet you can't. But if I want to go move $100,000 of cash value in Bitcoin onto my USB stick, it's going to take me, you know, about 10 minutes to see that block and about 60 minutes to feel comfortable with it. Six transaction confirmations. That's crazy. That doesn't exist anywhere else. And so, you know, we get used to it because it works and we get comfortable because it has the uptime. But like the gap in between what Bitcoin is offering to us versus what our existing systems are offering to us, that gap is only getting wider.
It's all without a centralized third party, which is crazy.
No security hole.
So, I mean, this is a little bit tangential to our topic, but I think it's an important aspect when, you know, we're setting up this great 2 days of conversations about mining. Is this idea of the Bitcoin token having a free floating value? This idea that you see people come out of the woodwork year after year, they say, you know, I like blockchain, but like the Bitcoin token makes no sense to me. Like we should just peg it to gold or we should peg it to dollars. But at the core, you need the token to be a native bearer token that is digitally native to the protocol so that it can pay the miners without a trusted third party. I feel like that is lost on a lot of people.
I think that, you know, and we'll get into this in sort of like a what's everybody else doing? But there are these concepts of endogeneity and exogeneity. So what endogenous means is what is happening within the system. Exogenous is what is happening outside the system. So what Bitcoin is the best at is drawing a clear line in the sand about what is supposed to be self-referential versus what is supposed to be outside referential. So the difficulty adjustment is actually an exogenous concept, right? It's a concept that's related to the number of miners that are operating and the electricity and the infrastructure that's built up around them, right? So Bitcoin is tethered to the real world. So if you want to add hash rate to the network, you have to go hire a general contractor to go build you a mining site. You've got to go call one of the ASIC manufacturers and place an order. And you got to go figure out what money you're going to spend on all that stuff. So there's a forcing function to tie the Bitcoin system to other real world, non-digital constraints. And so that's very valuable in maintaining the lack of a trusted coordinator or third party. But then you have to think about what does Bitcoin do self-referentially? The self-referential part of Bitcoin is the tokens, is the halving, is the 21 million hard cap. And those are all self-referential concepts that are enabled without a trusted third party because of this exogenous, externally referential concept that's existing sort of in the way that proof of work is delivered to the market. This is wildly different than what a proof of stake system does, for instance. And like, this is the key difference is like, if you run a proof of stake system, it is foundationally self-referential across the entire system. There's a great, I forget if it was an interview or a tweet that Vitalik gave where he basically says like, you know, Bitcoin lives by the rules of physics and Ethereum lives by the rules that we are able to construct in our simulated reality.
He's like, we can make our own
and that's
physics.
Way better. We can do our own reality. And I'm like, well, so it's never, so that's a totally dysfunctional way of trying to design an independent, decentralized, you know, system where the asymmetry is given to the individual rather than the centralizing authority at the middle, right? If you want to be in charge of your own money, don't do that.
Yeah, I think he said that in a Ethereum core dev call. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, right? So one of the things at the park that we're very focused on is trying to empower the local community and also empower other people that are trying to empower their own local communities around the country. And, you know, that has been a very fulfilling process, but it mostly takes, you know, people caring and like actually wanting to support their community. But on the mining side, it's pretty amazing that just from the incentives alone, you have all these actors around the world that aren't necessarily working together or coordinating, but individually, because their incentives are find cheap, efficient power, help, you know, whatever, wherever their locales are, make sure that they're in a solid, stable situation, just out of sheer greed or capitalism or incentives, that they end up empowering a lot of communities and improving our infrastructure is pretty crazy.
Well, and this is what to return to like the fair distribution concept in Bitcoin, what proof of work and mining represents is equality of revenue, right? There is no terahash is treated preferentially based on jurisdiction, based on, you know, energy type or source or any of this, right? Like if I generate one terahash hour, no matter where else on the planet somebody else generates a terahash hour, they have a claim on revenues equal to mine. And so my job as a miner and all miners' jobs is to deliver those terahash hours in as efficient a way as possible, right? Because revenue minus costs equals profit. So the incentive is to deliver terahash hours as economically as viable. And that makes a bunch of different business models available that didn't exist before. And that's how you end up improving infrastructure in places that, you know, maybe didn't have an energy buyer. So you couldn't justify a project, for instance. But this idea that you know, Bitcoin is equally available on a per terahash hour basis, like that's what makes this fair.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on, and I guess this is a little bit tangential too. I'm curious what your thoughts are on this kind of divergence we're seeing in America, but then also globally, where some community leaders are encouraging miners to come in and increase their baseload, right? And give them, you know, more efficient built out infrastructure, basically fund that infrastructure for them, right? And because miners can just turn off at will. Unlike miners are often compared to data centers. But the difference is you can't turn off a Netflix data center, because if you turn off a Netflix data center, then no one can stream their favorite movie. But with Bitcoin, it can be on demand. You can turn off. And all of a sudden, we've seen a lot of jurisdictions kind of encourage miners to come into those places. But at the same time, we see jurisdictions like New York that are going the exact opposite way, right? Where they're trying to basically push out miners, that they're threatened that miners are using too much power. Do you see that divergence increasing over the next 5 years, 6 years? Or is there going to be like are we going to see most jurisdictions start to kind of welcome it?
The short answer is like both and yes, right? Like there's enough jurisdictions that are out there where we're going to see all the behaviors, right? And you know, it's going to be everything kind of under the sun. I think, you know, this gets at this sort of more foundational problem, which is like Americans are pretty energy illiterate, right? And that's not our fault. It's just like this energy system that powers our lives has become extremely abstracted away from our day-to-day. And so, you know, we hear about it when there are, you know, polar Nordic megalodon vortexes that come out of the ocean and eat our children. You know, and then everybody wakes up and says, like, oh my God, our power systems are so screwed up. Like, we need to revamp them. You know, or we need to go past trillions of dollars of legislation to go, you know, build things that may or may never exist. But you know, so there's this incredible distortion in our literacy around how energy is generated, transmitted, and delivered. And so I think like where I'm very excited and bullish on Bitcoin and proof of work is that, you know, if you asked me 10 years ago, am I going to be able to get this group of 100 plus people together to talk about electricity? The answer would have been no. But because of Bitcoin and because of proof of work and because of a new business model, which is industrial scale mining, we are getting really smart people together who are having complex, nuanced, and important discussions around how electricity is generated, transmitted, and delivered. And what does that mean when it's deployed as a tool for human flourishing? Those conversations are actually happening. We're seeing, you know, interesting things happen, you know, all over kind of the infrastructure stack. As it exists, you know, I'm a, if you've seen me speak before, you know, I like the nuke. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of exciting stuff that's going on there, but, you know, really what's the most important part is that we have a new business model. It's proof of work based, it's Bitcoin enabled. And so we're going to deploy that business model into any jurisdiction that's willing to kind of meet us where we are, as an industry. And grow into sort of the next iteration of the American electric system.
I mean, it's more than just a business model, right? It's a global free market for energy that's never existed before. That's fucking insane.
You know, this and just to beat a dead horse, you know, this is why Bitcoin needs to be paid careful attention to for the 0-to-1 innovations that it represents. Provable digital scarcity, credible sound money, no trusted third party, settlement finality, new market continuous bid for megawatt hours. Add that to the list.
Love it. Let's give Harry a huge round of applause.